You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hello and welcome to the Football Fanalytics podcast in association with 23. This is the show that explores the ever-growing world of football analytics and takes on the many tactical and topical discussions within the game. It's episode 62 and we are talking about the gaffers this week. My name is Ryan Bailey and I'm joined by the gaffer of this podcast. It's Mark Carey. Mark, how are you doing?
I'm not the gaffer of this podcast. We are joint managers. I've said it before. We are the Gerard Houllier and Roy Evans of 1997 in the Liverpool dugout. We are joint managers, and that's the only way I'd have it, Ryan.
But wasn't that a massive failure in terms of a managerial collaboration? Didn't they do really badly?
It ended in tears. Yeah, that's a good point. You do make a very good point. But the point is, Ryan, We're a joint force. We
are collaborative. Has there ever been any other ones? Has there ever been any other joint manager partnerships? I don't really remember them.
I think there's been a few. There was one in Salford not so long ago. I forget their names. Listeners can remind me. But
the Neville brothers.
The Neville brothers, exactly, yeah. I am a joint gaffer. We are in this together, Ryan.
All right.
But no, I'm all good. Happy return of domestic men's football.
Yes.
That's always fun. We've had obviously spoke about it before in terms of the Women's Euros and how great that was. And then we spoke about, obviously, FPL pre-season. Now we're into it. We're 2 weeks into it, of the Premier League, at least, and other leagues starting all over Europe. We're back to it. How excited have you been?
Yeah, massively. I mean, I guess, aside from the fact it hasn't been a happy return for one Liverpool fan on this podcast and a guilty Manchester United fan on this podcast. Mm. I think lots of other people have got reason to be happy, haven't they? I mean, there hasn't been a lack of excitement, has there, from the very off, which has been good.
No, plenty to unpick already. I'm quite glad to see that I think all three of the promoted sides they've at least got points on the board. I'm trying to think whether all three have won. I think they all have, yes. So that's always good to see as well. It was always good to see the new tactical styles of the new promoted side. So that's really interesting to see. I mean, it's too early to tell in terms of the table, of course, but just to see different patterns of new managers, new styles, that's clear to see already, or lack of new style if we are talking about Manchester United, but we can maybe talk about that another time. I think already we know that that's going to be worthy of a whole episode in itself, the early weeks and months of the Erik ten Hag era. I think fans would absolutely love that.
Well, we probably ought to do that at some point soon because he probably won't have long left, really, will he? Probably ought to be within the next few weeks, just in case. I mean, he's obviously a prime example of a new manager on the scene. Is there any other new managers in the Premier League that aren't from the promoted sides? I don't think there are there?
None that come to mind right now, but I think a few came in the January or midway through last season as well. So there's still, you know, stamping your mark on the team and the whole cliche of having a full pre-season with the side and all that caper. So still plenty to unpick, isn't there?
There absolutely is. I mean, we're going to get into managers pretty straight away, but in terms of new managers who came up from the Championship, I was very impressed with Steve Cooper when I watched the Nottingham Forest game the other day. Because it was a great game to watch against West Ham. But what I really enjoyed about Steve Cooper was at the very end, the camera operator took one of those floating Steadicam things to try and get the pre-match reaction, and he basically went, "Get out the way, it's not finished," which really made me laugh. So that was a manager highlight so far. Good to see Scott Parker again in the Premier League.
And fashionista Scott Parker, you mean?
Fashionista Scott Parker. I read somewhere that the top he was wearing was worth over £900.
Stop it.
For a football manager wearing a cardigan,
you could get loan for that much.
Well, yeah, but also let's have it right. Like with the heat over the weekend, and he's wearing a £900 cardigan. I wonder if it's got like inbuilt aircon or something within it. We don't know. And then obviously the manager highlight of the weekend was Mr. Conte versus Mr. Tuchel. Tuchel? Tuchel? Is it Tuchel?
Tuchel. Bit of a soft. Tuchel. On that.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that was quite something. I only realised after the handshake that the reason that he held it on was that he wanted eye contact. Thomas Tuchel wanted eye contact from Conte when he was making the handshake, which was interesting to see. I mean, you love it, don't you? It's box office stuff. Like, it's fun to see. The game itself was, I mean, the end of it, obviously, with Harry Kane scoring was quite something. But just a bit of drama as well can never be a bad thing. Maybe it was the heat that they were all a little bit stressed, a little bit hot and bothered.
Flustered.
A bit flustered. But it was fun to see, wasn't it? No harm done.
Yeah, I thought when Tuchel was like making the gesture with his two fingers pointing at the eyes, I was thinking he was basically going like, "You, me, outside after the game." But he was actually going, "Just look at me."
Yeah, he's actually being quite respectful.
Just look at me. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the post-match afterwards. Still a bit frosty, but then they'd both done interviews and they were both giggling about it. So that was very funny. Yeah. In terms of a tactical battle, obviously a great one as well. But I guess we shouldn't spoil it all in the intro, Mark, should we really? We've sort of just teed up managers. And that's what this episode is going to be all about. So should we get on with it?
Yeah, man, you've spiked it up. It's like volleyball. You've absolutely spiked it up for us to just slam it now. So no better time to crack on, man.
Okay, so Managerlytics, Mark. Obviously, enjoy the pun, as always. We've done Penalytics before. Anything with lytics in, we try. Managers is something we've wanted to discuss for a while. We dipped our toe in a little while back, didn't we? In fact, that's a long while back.
Early
in episode
doors.
Five. We talked about the manager bounce, but that was more specifically focused on new managers coming in and the performance of teams and whether that's a real thing or not. In terms of that spike in form. So it feels to me like this topic is sort of up there with the most opinion-based things we might talk about in terms of the fact that most people have an opinion on managers. Everyone in the pub has an opinion. Everyone after a game has an opinion on their team's manager, etc. Whether their manager is decent, etc. But what is it always based on? Because often I might go, "Oh no, they're not a good manager." But do I know if they're actually a good manager based on all the many factors? You know, so what in this episode we're going to try and talk about what we can base that question on. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's really hard to. I mean, for reasons that we'll go into, it's quite hard to really quantify the impact of a manager with data over and above what is just simply team performance, which. It's hard to, I think, disentangle how much of that is attributed to the manager and their tactics, their setup, etc., which, again, we'll come on to, and how much that is just down to having better players. So, you know, if you've got players of higher value, how much is it that the manager is making them even better, which is why they're winning, and how much is it just that if you or I were to be on the sidelines and said, you know, if you just put yourselves into a half-decent formation, go out and try and win the game, what would be the overarching difference across the course of a season? Now, I'm taking that to the extreme, but you get the point I'm making. I also think there's so many kind of unquantifiables for a manager where obviously they're having to do so many, I mean, social media things now as much as anything, but things like press conferences, things like the fact that they are the spokesperson, they are the face of the club primarily, of how much charisma they have, all those different things as well, which count for so much that you could be a really good tactician, but you might not necessarily have the personality, therefore by the fans, you might not necessarily be liked as much. Do you know what I mean? Before we even go into the more of the stylistic, the tactical, the data side of it, I think that what sometimes can be deemed a good, bad manager, an interesting manager or not an interesting manager, can also be just simply the social element in the charisma, especially in the modern day.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. I actually, funnily enough, when thinking about this episode, hadn't even thought about the fact that likability is a factor within people's opinions with the manager, because we've all got our favorite managers who we love to watch and hear talk, and there are some cult icon managers in terms of someone like Neil Warnock or Ian Holloway, who are just the most like funny characters going. So that's a really interesting one. We can come back to that, actually. On your first point, funnily enough, that always used to be the age-old question, didn't it? Well, there was two parts of the age-old question, one of which was, if I managed this Man City team, I could win the league. That's one thing that, I'm not saying I'd think that, but as in that used to be just something, a phrase that I'd heard. But then also, what would happen if you put Pep Guardiola in charge of like Stoke a few years back? That was one that I used to hear a lot. Like, you know, he just wouldn't have the same results, obviously, because it's Stoke. And a manager like Guardiola obviously has had the best teams in the world, has only ever managed the best teams in the world, with big budgets where he can spend money, etc., etc. Would Sam Allardyce have had success with Manchester City? Obviously not to the same way Guardiola has, but it's a really interesting starting point, isn't it? And many, many different opinions off that.
Yeah, and I think that's the key point that you touch upon, where it's how much of an influence has Pep Guardiola had, or managers who are deemed to be world-class managers, how much influence do they have over and above what you would expect from that team? And this is the thing that's so hard to, as I say, disentangle, where maybe if, yeah, let's say a Sam Allardyce were to manage Manchester City, you know, a few seasons ago, would they have maybe won the league or been there or thereabouts? Probably, yes. But then Pep Guardiola goes and gets 100 points. So it's the manner in which you know, manage. And I think I saw an interview or read an interview with Sergio Aguero about Pep Guardiola, and he said that, you know, he makes even the world class, even the best, better. So it's something which he has that skill of doing, which is over and above the talent that they already have, which is what I mentioned before. He still manages to get, you know, individual quality out of them, and obviously as a team has the tactical principles in place to allow them to do that as well. So that's where you get your edges with as a manager, and we can come on to the specifics, as I say, formation and things like that. But it's really, really hard to quantify. I mean, how do you quantify it? When you're talking about things at the team level or even the player level, we've got all the metrics that we've spoken about a lot on this podcast, but how do you really know what, you know, other than maybe substitutions per 90, the things that the manager can actually control there in that game, how do you know exactly what it is that they've done or not done?
Well, it's a good question. Let me read out something from Sky Sports, which I think was the season before last, when Ryan Mason, do you remember this? You probably know what's coming. You remember when Ryan Mason was in charge of Tottenham?
And then
there was a graphic that came up, that Sky Sports put on. Sky Sports, by the way, who do Monday Night Football, which is one of the best analytical shows on TV. They put up a graphic that literally said the words, Ryan Mason, and it was like, games, including today, 2. Wins, 1. Major trophies, 0. And then it said right next to him, because they're playing Man City, it said Pep Guardiola, games, including today, 694. Wins, 517. Major trophies, 24. And it was like the sort of the meme reaction to that was absolutely fantastic, because who thought that was a good comparison in terms of, you know, putting those next to each other? But technically, Ryan Mason got 50% win percentage, which I'm guessing is higher than lots of managers in history. So what does it come down to? Sample size.
Sample size and context is key, all the above, all of the buzzwords. But no, I think that's, as funny as that is an interesting one. I think that's where, again, if you were to look at a manager's win percentage, that's not, this one is a very extreme case, but that's not a reliable method either, I think, because you could have a Pep Guardiola or lesser regarded managers who have managed big clubs, and the expectation is that they are going to win more games than they're not, versus, yeah, someone who's punching above their weight. Maybe go back to the likes of Stoke City. Tony Pulis, as a manager, probably overperformed for the quality of the side that he had. You look at someone maybe like Graham Potter now in the Premier League, obviously with Brighton, that given the and Thomas Frank, people like that for Brentford, that given the budget and the facilities, etc., that they have in comparison to those top teams, look how much of an edge they're getting. But if you were to look at their win percentage, it would be fairly modest, of course. It's the it's the nature of it. But that's maybe another way that you can disentangle it. And there's, I mean, I'm going into analytics straight away now, but I think that there's other things as well that you could look at. So it's something I've done through The Athletic, and I think we've spoken about before on this podcast, is maybe look at things like a club's ELO rating. So there's a website called Club ELO, and put simply, it basically gives an overall rating or a ranking of a team basically after every single game. And I won't go into the specifics, but you can basically look to see what the ranking of a team is when the managers come in and when they left. So it's always going to be relative to, you know, you could, where you start is irrelevant compared to where you end. So if you're going on,
you're still comparing it to the same team, basically.
Yeah, you're comparing rather than between, which I think is a really valuable way to say that for all of the clubs that this manager has managed, he or she has always taken that club to a higher level. So always comparing within rather than between. So that is maybe already, thinking of an analytics perspective, a way that you could try and look to see how good a manager is over and above win percentage.
Yeah, I guess that's a really good starting point and way to look at it. I guess what that doesn't take into account, which we know, is the different context and factors around real life a little bit, doesn't it? And certain factors at play, etc.
Oh, completely.
Team situations and everything. But that is really interesting. I guess the final thing on that is that I would be really interested if someone had really good performances with lower ranked teams and had always improved them based on that ELO rating way of looking at it, but then took a step up to a higher team where the expectations are bigger and the players are better, etc. And then are they able to improve them in the same way? So I think there are examples, aren't there, of when if we think of managers in different tiers, and Guardiola and Klopp are obviously the top in our league. If Graham Potter were to step up, because the fantastic work he's done at Brighton, do you think he would have the same results dealing with big personalities and better players, basically? Do you think that's always something as well you have to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. And you've seen it with managers like Mauricio Pochettino. Obviously, he was at Espanyol, then he came to Southampton, and then that was a step up to then go to Tottenham, and obviously since gone on to be manager of PSG, no longer, of course. But it's hard to always tell whether a manager, a lot like a player, will make the step up. And I think another wider point is, again, just thinking about win percentage, from the fans' perspective of judging a manager, would you rather them win and maybe win ugly, maybe win via Route 1 football, thinking about, unfortunately, your Sam Allardyce's, Tony Pulis and Sean Dyche, and it's maybe a bit agricultural, it's pragmatic, but you more likely to win, maybe not see as much of the ball, versus the style and the approach from a Graham Potter, where again, you might not win all the games, but you at least get to see entertaining football. From the fans' perspective, can you forgive losing a few games or losing more games than you might win, but at least the approach is different? And that's where, again, you see the style from the manager, the fingerprints that they have over their team, the way that they set their team up, systems of play, approach in possession, out of possession, those sorts of things that you can really start to see over a longer period of time, talking about months, years, rather than the Erik ten Hag era that we've got at the moment, really start to see the principles of play. And if those are entertaining as well, could fans maybe be a bit more forgiving when the results maybe don't go that way, if that makes sense?
Absolutely. It's funny, isn't it? Because certainly at the moment, and probably for the last few years, the emphasis on style of play and systems and sort of just culture and ethos, it's almost like every manager has to be in a box, don't they, these days, in terms of categorized, in terms of what they do, how they like to play, what they want their teams to look like, etc. Whereas, I don't know about you, but I don't remember 10 years ago, or maybe I just paid less attention then, but 10 years ago, was that such a big deal in terms of, when you had more people like Ancelotti, and I know he just won the Champions League, that's a silly thing to say, but Ancelotti and Mourinho in the Premier League, the sort of merry-go-round of managers who always got the same sort of style jobs, like your Alan Pardews and Mark Hughes and managers like that. I don't remember ever thinking like, oh, Mark Hughes is a this type of manager. It always felt like it was just this manager knows that how to get their best out of their players and organise as well, etc. You know, I know you had defensive coaches and stuff like that in terms of Mourinho, but do you feel like that's been an absolute evolution in terms of the last 5 years or so?
Yeah, interesting question. I don't know whether, again, it's been something that's been more documented as much as maybe we've had a greater awareness of it, because as we've mentioned, this is why we do this podcast, systems of play and tactical styles have been a thing for decades and decades. So it's not necessarily that it's just that, but I think it is more now that any manager who comes into any league or any well-known league, that they do have to come with a kind of a dossier of, this is how I like my teams to play.
Yeah.
And I think that, yeah, it kind of is maybe more the case, because you do have managers who are, I think it's more, that's more of a sort of a proactive approach where you know what the Guardiola style is, you know what the Sean Dyche style is, you know what the Graham Potter style is, you know, Jurgen Klopp, Jesse Marsh more recently is so much has been spoken about the Jesse Marsh style, and Ralph Rangnick, you know, when he came into Manchester United. But I think it's maybe dying out, or maybe it's a little less popular, that managers are more reactive. And you know, you can certainly win games by being reactive to what the opposition does. So if it's quite clear how, I mean, we saw it on Monday, right? So it was quite clear how Liverpool were going to set up a 4-3-3. Yeah. They're never really going to change from that. They rarely have under Jurgen Klopp. Now, Patrick Vieira set up with a five at the back, which I think was only the third time that he's done that since he's joined Crystal Palace. That's reacting to the way that Liverpool play, and you know how they like to get players into the half space and attack with a front five because of the wing backs pushing up. You know, Crystal Palace had to react to that, and they stifled Liverpool, and they went and got a goal on the counter attack, and they obviously got nicked a point as a result. So there's nothing wrong with doing that. Some people might think that that is not the greatest thing, but you have to sometimes react to the opposition, because if you're proactive approach doesn't always work, you need to adapt. And I know that a lot of clubs, and even the best, will react to have different approaches and different systems, but do you get what I mean in terms of, you don't necessarily have to have a system of play, but you can respond to the opposition and maximize your strengths and expose the opposition's weaknesses?
Yeah, because it almost feels like there's a lot of the managers these days will have their way of playing, and that's how they stick to it, and regardless of what's happening in the game, sometimes managers will just sort of stick to what they know anyway, and we'll get the result. It's interesting. I mean, the chat about Serena Wiegmann in terms of managing the Lionesses at the tournament, a lot of the positive sort of reaction that she got and things she did well was tweaking things mid-game and managing the games perfectly, isn't it? So I wonder how much of a, not a dying art, obviously, because everyone manages within the game, but I wonder how important making the right decisions, tweaking things mid-game, well-timed substitutions, the right substitutions, etc. I wonder how important that is now with managers just sticking to what they know, as maybe it was 20 years ago. I bet, you know, Ferguson, etc., was probably a genius at making the right decisions at the right time, and it all about in-game stuff. But I just wonder how much of a balance that shifted.
Yeah, no, that is an interesting one. I think that the Serena Wiegmann example is a good one, because that is an example where a lot was made of, well, the tactical decisions, yes, but the things which you can see are clear, again, the fingerprint of the squad rotation or starting 11 rotation or lack thereof, because obviously England had the same starting 11 across the whole tournament and benefited as a consequence. Their use of substitutions, as you say, how many substitutions they make and at what point they make them. There's only a certain element of things that you can do within the game that you can control as a manager, and obviously substitutions is one of them. Between games, obviously you have all that time on the training ground, but you've still got to pick a team to go out there and execute that. So those sorts of things, you can start to see a bit of the style as well. And across the course of a domestic season, you can see, especially now that we have the five substitutions, well, across all top five European leagues now, the Premier League has joined everyone else, that you start to see, okay, well, is maybe a Pep Guardiola going to use all five substitutions in one go? Do it, I think you can only do it a maximum of three times, or do, you know, a two and another one, or what, you know, what is their approach? Do they like to change things early on? Do they like to change things late and try and see whether the starting 11 can continue the way they are? And it's, those are the things which you start to find interesting within the game, aside from the general tactical approach and philosophy. We've not even said philosophy this whole episode. You've got to talk about a manager's really philosophy, haven't you?
Oh, what did we? You said the word dossier, and we haven't even said philosophy. Wow, Blimey. We need to look, take a long, hard look at ourselves and have a pep talk on that one. Has anyone ever looked into what, like, average minute managers make substitutions on and stuff like that? I mean, I don't know how much that tells you and stuff, I'm sure. But do you know what I mean? Like, is there a... who was it? I mean, there was a time where... Like, I swear, I can't remember which manager it was, but in the Premier League, like, they were renowned for not making a change. Even if they're right up against it, you know, even in 80 minutes, they still hadn't made a change. Is there, or, and then some people just sort of, you know, get their options on early, etc. Is there anything in that? Has anyone looked at that before?
Yeah, it's something we did. I think we did it as a whole company for The Athletic. I helped with it in terms of the numbers. Last season, I think we looked at changes to the starting 11, so how many unchanged lineups there were. And if I recall correctly, West Ham had the fewest changes to their starting 11. And then we looked at the substitution, or the substitutions per game, and the substitution minute as well. And I can put a link in the bio of that piece because I thought it was, yeah, it's worth looking at. And I did a piece recently about the five substitutions and had a look at basically people saying that the top sides have got the advantage because they've got a higher quality player coming off the bench, yeah, and things like that. So I basically looked into that of, is it the case that the top quality sides will just bring on like five substitutions after an hour and then just blitz the side because they've just still got so much energy and quality? Mm. And it was actually not the case. It was that there was what was the opposite. So the top teams tended to bring on players later on than the not top teams, the lower teams. But that makes sense, I think, because it was essentially that you're more likely to make a change and a substitution when you're either drawing or behind. When things are going well, you're more likely to, you know, keep things the way they are for the most, yeah, part. You're less likely to make three changes on the hour mark. So it completely makes sense. But yeah, there's so many different things that you can look at from that perspective. But a few of them are on site on The Athletic.
Excellent. And here's another one. Have you ever looked at, in The Athletic, manager success in correlation with outfit choice? So in terms of like tracksuit managers, suits, I'm obviously joking.
I knew that the minute you asked the question, I could see the giggle in your voice, and I knew that something funny was coming. But that would be a good one, actually. And I think, you see,
I mean, it'd be interesting to see what the results were, like, you know, because I mean, managers changed their, you know, their attire. You know what? You know, did Klopp? I swear, Klopp used to be quite like sort of like wear chinos and stuff, and now he's like a tracksuit manager through and through, cap branded, true, you know, thing. Guardiola, I mean, who knows? Guardiola, when he wore his scarf, felt dangerous. But
well,
you know,
I was going to ask you what would the categories be? I think it would be smart, sporty, or casual. Is there another category in that?
Well, I think within sporty, you've obviously, well, I always call them tracksuit managers, but yeah, I guess sporty covers a wide range of stuff.
Because Pep isn't a tracksuit manager. He's him and Scott Parker would be like casual
fashion managers.
Gerrard would be smart. Klopp would be, yeah, sporty. Are we just naming Spice Girls here?
we are at the moment, yeah. Lampard started going a bit sort of dad coach recently, I've found. You know, sort of not particularly fashionable polos and stuff. So maybe if he changed that, results would pick up. I don't know.
I think he'd be casual. Tuchel would be sporty. I don't know. This is a fun game. We should, everyone else should get involved with this.
Yeah.
You know, send us some emails, send us some things on Twitter of your thoughts.
Yeah, but that's something, you know, we shouldn't forget, Mark. We can analyse things till the cows come home, but it's the important things like manager attire that matters. but enough of my silliness for the people who are here for the hardcore analytics. I mean, you're never going to get hardcore analytics, but We should have a look at what's been done in that space, shouldn't we?
Let's give it a go.
Mark, this is exciting. Why don't you tell the listeners about our new collaboration with Spitch? Tell them what Spitch is.
Yeah, we've been wanting to share this with the listeners for some time. So Spitch is basically a live fantasy football manager app, and you can pit yourself against other managers, basically. And the fun thing is that you can win real money in the process. And what's great is that you can compete across multiple leagues worldwide. So rather than just the Fantasy Premier League that we do, you can compete in other leagues like the German Bundesliga, the things like the Champions League and the Europa League as well.
I mean, if it was like Fantasy Premier League, then we'd win absolutely nothing. But it's not like Fantasy Premier League because the difference is you can create a brand new lineup for each match day. So basically, no more selection regret when a player you've chosen is going through a bad run of form. What else is different, Mark?
Well, I think it's right up our street because it goes into greater depth with the analytics side, which is so true to the Football Fanalytics podcast. So it awards points for basically every action on the pitch. So things like passes, tackles, blocks, and shots. Everything that you can think of all count towards your match score.
So for the first time ever, we can cheer on a pot shot from miles away.
Exactly.
So make sure you sign up, download the app and register now. Once you've registered, you can join the Football Fanalytics Podcast League. So come and get involved, play against me and Mark. The link is in our bio. Join Spitch now. So, Mark, if I were putting my analytical hat on and I wanted to actually look at this in terms of the best way of categorising, analysing managers' performance, etc., what sort of things have been done in that space before that I could go look at?
Well, yeah, there's a few places, really. And I think it goes to show that, again, just how difficult it is to disentangle it from, you know, the team style. But, you know, we'll try our best and I'll go into it. But, yeah, there's a few really interesting pieces, and we can put the link into the bio for all of them, really. But starting with Smarter Scout, which is a something we use quite often at The Athletic, and I've used this before. It's called Coaching Profiles, and it's a really interesting kind of dashboard, I guess, this graphic to show for, you know, each manager, each coach at that club, how they like to approach the game. It splits it really neatly between home and away as well, which I think is interesting to for all of this. You've got to look at things, home and away, in possession, out of possession, against maybe top sides, lower sides. There's so much nuance to it that it's really hard to really give a definitive answer of a manager's DNA, because it can obviously depend. But it's a really interesting piece from Smarter Scout. They show things like the most frequent formations used, attacking style, defending style, things like when they like to make substitutions, where they like to have width on the pitch and get their fullbacks wide, how they recover the ball, things like that. So it's I'll put a link into it, but it's just a really interesting breakdown to show the different approaches. But I come back to it, a lot of this is, in a great way, largely just team style. So what is the team style? And of course, then, by definition of having that style, it is led by the manager and the coaching staff. But do you know what I mean? We tend to do this, actually, without realizing, when we look at just how a club's getting on, what's their PPDA, all those different things. Mm. It is just indicative of what a manager likes them to do. So we do this, you know, we have been doing this for a long time, but it's more just attributing it to the manager rather than the actual club.
But also, interestingly, this is obviously called a coaching profile. Mark, we haven't discussed the difference between a manager and a head coach.
Head coach, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's...
I bet there's a list somewhere, which I'm now kicking myself that I haven't Googled, but I bet there's a list somewhere that tells you if a manager at a club is categorized as manager or a head coach or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, because they have different names, don't they, for different clubs?
They do, yeah. That's got to be another episode for us, mate, I think, to really break it down. And it's much of a muchness, isn't it? I don't know whether sometimes it's a bit of politics at play, because I think Benitez complained once, I forget which club he was at, it might have been Newcastle, where he was like, I'm not the manager, I'm just the head coach, and said it in a press conference, and it was sometimes a bit, you know, a bit of a dig at the owners. Or
didn't Arteta get made the manager, not head coach? Wasn't Arteta the head coach, then now he's the manager?
Another episode on this is great.
Yeah, it might not be Arteta, but I swear someone basically got almost like promoted within their same job to just a better title, basically.
Now they trust them.
Yeah, maybe one of us should be the manager and one of us should be the head coach. Maybe that's how the collaboration...
Let's put it to a poll.
Collaboration. Who's the manager and who's the head coach? I mean, I can already tell you how that's going to go. No one's going to want me coaching anyone.
So, well, now you've primed them, you're going to get the sympathy vote.
Yeah, but also, no one's going to really want me making the decisions either. So you have to think about that, really. I'll just be the social media manager. In terms of different categories, though, as well, I mean, we were saying about tracksuit managers versus smart managers, etc. But I heard the term about Ten Hag when he just got appointed, that they called him like a very much an on the grass manager. Do you know what I mean? But then that also takes me back to when, like, I don't think Solskjaer, when he was in charge of Man United, took many sessions, did he? He left it to his coaches. So again, quite an interesting one for another time, maybe. But the kind of hands-on approach, your decisions and your style of play, etc. But then the way you actually deliver them as well is a really interesting way to think about it.
True, and it's about having the whole coaching staff, isn't it? And those that you trust. I think that Steven Gerrard doesn't tend to get too involved. I think he only steps in when he sort of needs to, but he leaves it to his staff. It was formerly Mick Beale. He's now a manager at QPR, and now he's got Neil Critchley in, who was manager at Blackpool, to be more of the coaching side, and he sort of oversees the operation. So there's plenty of managers who do that sort of thing and trust their staff to be more of the, you know, the one on the grass, as you say. So again, they're just more of the spokesperson, I was going to say, but they're just the figurehead for the club. But it's always going to be a team effort in terms of the actual tactical style.
Yeah. What else can we look at then?
So yeah, so there was the Smarter Scout one. And as I say, there doesn't seem to be too much out there that I've seen. So if the listeners have any other thoughts and things that they've read, then absolutely do send it in, because we're always willing to learn more. And yeah, I'm not the authority on it, but there's another really interesting one that I've seen from Analytics FC. And they have a really cool thing called Coach ID. And again, I'll put the post in the bio, but it says it's using data to scout your club's next head coach. And they have a really good, again, a bit of a dashboard of the characteristics and the play style of every manager, and it splits it up really well in terms of, you know, their different approach of having more of a low block. Are they more likely to play long balls? Are they more likely to circulate it a bit more, keep the ball more, counter press, one of our buzzwords, and how that also differs depending on the team that they play, the opponent that they play against. The top sides, do they play in a slightly different way to against the bottom sides? And I think, again, it speaks about that nuance that we have. So there's some really cool stuff in there. The type of styles that they have, it's some of the names of this are great. So you've got part of the bus, you've got direct domination, full control, bait the press, wing overload, and build up as well. And then you can start to, it's a really good way to do it, isn't it? In terms of, okay, well, we've just... Well, we're not really happy with our manager at the moment. We'd rather have someone who is going to be far more of a manager who's going to dominate. We want someone like Pep Guardiola, but not Pep Guardiola, because we can't afford him, who also plays like that. Is it, I don't know, Torino in Serie A? Okay, well, who's their manager? Yeah. And you know what I mean? We've done that sort of thing at the player level. You could also do that at the manager level as well. So Analytics FC have a really interesting way of doing that with the coach ID.
Well, because obviously, you know, the kind of succession plan for Guardiola and Klopp, etc., especially people who've been there a while and have got such high results, is always going to be a bit of a problem, isn't it? Because, you know, look at how certain teams... It's so easy to keep going back to Manchester United. I'm generally not doing that on purpose, but, you know, it's too obvious, because you go to the fact that they've had, what, like five managers since Ferguson, and then every single one... The squad is a product of five different managers trying to do it their way, and it's just horrendous, isn't it? But I guess if you scout ahead and recruit a manager who fits the same sort of ethos and philosophy, that word, as to the one you've got currently, and you can find the right person, well, then that's a much easier transition, isn't it, than trying to fit square pegs into round holes.
Completely. And then that works at the player level as well. And it's not, similarly, it's not to keep coming from Manchester United, but if they had a clear system in place at the higher level, at the board level, at the manager level, and at the player level, if there was a thread throughout, then you can start to sort of forgive them for maybe not doing so well. But if they don't have, you know, if everyone's being pulled in different directions, including the manager and then the players, then you can see why they're in the sort of chaos that they currently are in. But things might change, of course. But yeah, it's a really interesting one. And I mean, the final one in terms of the things that I've seen online are from 21st Group. And I think they're formerly known as 21st Club. But a really interesting piece on The Athletic, actually, which isn't just me keep promoting it.
Do you work for The Athletic?
No, but honestly, this isn't just me, but it's a really strong piece that I thought was useful. It was essentially looking, this is a couple of years ago now, but it was looking at maybe alternatives for Pep Guardiola when the time comes, sort of what you're speaking about before. And they use a really good thing looking at team quality. They have a rating system called World Super League, and it basically gives every club that they can going to get their hands on, an overall rating relative to each other, and you can start to see who are the strongest clubs and how that changes over time, a bit like that ELO rating that I mentioned, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And you can break it down in all different ways, and again I'll put a link in the bio, but it shows, you know, they can break it down to things like team style, of course, how similar it is to maybe the one that you the designated manager that you want to compare to, so in this case Pep Guardiola, the average tenure of a manager. I think that's a really interesting one, isn't it?
Because
if you are just someone who's going to come for 6 months, maybe a Sam Allardyce, do a bit of firefighting and then do one, then it's a bit different from someone who's more of a project manager who likes to, you know, have 3 to 4 years before they can actually see the fruits of their labour. I think that's a really interesting one. How much youth you use, how much are you more likely to bring, you know, players through from the academy or buy young? What's the average age of the squad? Just, you know, I think Jose Mourinho likes to have full of, you know, teams full of experience, or players full of experience, I should say, you know, a big physical, imposing side versus, you know, other people who like small technicians who are maybe younger as well. So I think that's a really interesting one. So that in terms of the fit, and then obviously the quality and the impact over and above the team style that the manager has, and an overall team quality that they've improved upon. So 21st Group, formerly 21st Club, have a really interesting model to be able to look at that as well. So those three are the main ones for me that I've found. But as I say to the listeners, if they know of any others, then absolutely do send them in, please.
This needs a part two, doesn't it? Because there's so many different branches of this tree to talk about. Don't know why I used a tree analogy. But for instance, like, we haven't even talked about team talks. Like, you know, the halftime team talk, or
we should definitely do another episode on this, because there's so much to pick
at,
not from an analytics perspective, but just from all the things we spoke about, the nuance of the manager approach, not even spoken about gone into detail about the press conferences and that charisma that
exactly
at the start.
This feels like it definitely needs a part two, and it also feels like we need to ask the listeners to send in different things about managers we haven't even thought of and what they'd like to hear us talk about in part two, because there's definitely legs in this. Mm-hmm. Let me leave you with a final thought on team talks. Have you watched the Arsenal All or Nothing?
I am one episode in.
Oh, I don't want to spoil anything then. It's not a spoiler. There's a fantastic moment where Arteta, who actually I found quite impressive in the documentary, and I wasn't sure I was going to, but he draws what you'd think would be a really amazing tactical diagram or something at halftime in one of the best teams in the country, team talk. And I think he draws like a brain and a heart holding hands. And it's basically just like passion, connect your thoughts, connect your passion, etc. Wow. And I was just thinking like, I just wish I knew what went on at halftime all the time, because I bet there's some absolute gems and funny things that you think would be way more sophisticated than they are. They're not. It might not be the holding hands, but there's a diagram of it somewhere. When you get there, let me know if I was right, but it's pretty much to that effect.
Well, you're dealing with people at the end of the day. For all that's speaking about managers and their style, to get the best out of the players at any level, you've got to treat them like humans, and it's whatever you can to evoke enough of a response to obviously get them to do what you want on the pitch. And sometimes it's shouting and bawling, sometimes it's being creative and drawing, apparently.
Yeah, well, that's right. Are you a shouting sort of manager, or a calm, or, you know, sort of brooding, say less manager, and they know you're annoyed? Yeah. There's so much to it. Part two.
All right,
let's park it there, and then we'll go for part two. That was great. Thanks very much, Mark.
Loved it.
And thank you to you, the listeners, for listening. Like we say, get in touch, especially on a part two Managerlytics, but get in touch anyway. We like to hear from you. We like to hear your ideas. We like to hear your questions. I'm sure we'll visit some questions in the next couple of episodes. So please do get in touch, and you know where to do that. We are on an email. We are fanalytics.pod@gmail.com, and we're also on social media. At Fanalytics Pod is the handle to search for. I've no idea what's coming up next week, but I mean, the speed of which the football is moving, it'll be good fun. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.